This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Blair and Estelle Hunt. They are the proprietors of Bald Hills, which is an international award-winning wine, but you've also won an award recently on sustainable viticulture. So I'd like to talk a wee bit about sustainable viticulture. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're well, thank you. That's interesting, the sustainability thing, because we're just not all that long back from the UK having picked up six trophies, of which one was the inaugural sustainability trophy at the International Wine Challenge Awards. Mm-hmm. They inaugurated three what they call Planet Earth Awards, of which sustainability was one. And I must say, we were, you know, very, very surprised to pick up that championship award.
Why was that?
Surprised? Well, one, we weren't aware of it, for a start, and being the inaugural award, and so that was a complete surprise. The fact that the 2005 Pinot Noir sort of gathered together yet another award, so I'm just saying six trophies. We've been privileged to have gold medals here and there in our career, but to get six trophies on the one wine at two very credible wine shows was just enormous for us and has helped us quite immensely, I must say, in positioning our brand.
What is sustainable viticulture? I know in New Zealand there seems to be about three different standards, but which differentiate what exactly it is versus, say, organic or biodynamic? Because I get quite confused.
Well, certainly not organic nor biodynamic. We, having said that, that doesn't mean we don't subscribe to some of those notions. But with the sustainability side of things, we're with Sustainable Wine New Zealand, and we're accredited there, and we've recently been through the second audit. So 3 years ago, we were audited initially to become accredited or certified, and now 3 years later, we've just been through that again. And what they're checking for and what their standards are to determine how we're looking after the land in particular that yields the this good wine, how we're dealing with it, what we're doing to reduce the carbon footprint effects, the fact that we have large amenity plantings around the block, the fact that we are fastidious in recording any spraying that we're doing for weed or for canopy spraying. So there's a strong recording aspect to the process. And at the end of the day, I guess we're concerned about the very soil that the plants are in, the vines are in. In our case, we have a regime which rotates the inter-row grassing with cropping. And so, if you like, every second row is grass, and alternatively, every second row has triticale in there, which is ploughed back into the ground at the end of the season, and we rotate that on a three-year basis. Every 10th row, we have some plantings to attract, if you like, insects and have a bit of biological control of, amongst other things, the apple leaf roller, mm-hmm. which gets into the grapes. In that 10th row, we plant buckwheat and mustard and phacelia, and the flowers on particularly the phacelia seem to attract those insects.
It seems to be almost just a generic look after the land type thing, not too much spraying.
Yes, look after the land, but the very word sustainability means that the land should be sustained for future generations, not worn out land. You know, it's mm-hmm. got to be kept to be good land and or even improved. Mm. But sustainable also for the people who are working the land so that they can make a living from a sustainable living from that land. So it has two meanings.
Oh, okay. So it's not just the land, it's also the people.
Not just the land, it's also the people and and what they're doing. You know, it's no good improving land and having wonderful land but not being able to make a living out of it.
Yeah, sure.
No sense.
Do you have you found that they in organic viticulture they talk about humus of the soil,
yeah,
or the texture of the soil? Mm. Do you find that the soil's improved over the last few? Because to be honest, Central Otago is pretty barren usually in terms of quality of soil.
Well, for example, we would sample a soil sample every 2 years here, so we have a good idea of what's going on. We have cut very deep soil profiles to see what's there, and from that to determine what sort of rootstock to put into different parts of the vineyard. If you look at the back of our property, you've got washings that have come down from the bald hills behind us, and so you've got a high degree of fertility, particularly in what is our reasoning block.
Okay.
So you've got soil sampling and you've got petiole sampling each year, so you know what's in the ground, you know what you're taking out by way of grapes at each harvest, and essentially we're on a replacement level only of chemicals going back in for through fertigation.
Okay, so you're allowed. I've noticed you've got drip irrigation throughout. So are you irrigating through your drip irrigation, or are you just...
No, that's irrigation all the time. I mean, that's on right now.
Yep.
And that system also is the transport system for any fertigation or any fertiliser that we're applying. And the fertilisers that are applied are on a replacement value. You're putting back in what you've taken out in the previous crop, essentially.
Okay. And it also said you're talking about carbon emissions, low carbon. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Is it through mitigation or management to keep your carbon levels down? Or...
Well, I think I mentioned previously that we had the amenity plantings, and so, of course, that assists in dealing with the carbon issue. It's interesting that the height of the wires and the vineyard has some influence on what's allowed, if you like, as recognised cover. I'm told there, and I'm not full bottle on this one, but I'm told that they don't qualify as part of the cover for
the vines themselves. You mean
the vines?
What do you mean in terms of carbon absorption?
Well, yeah, that they need to be more than, I believe, 2 meters. But that is something that you're going to have to do your homework on, Chris, on that one. I don't know that one. Okay. You're just welcoming our German short-haired pointer Jack into the fold.
I think. He was coming up and giving me a bit of a sniff. So he's
there
quite a friendly fella.
Yeah.
Do you do any carbon mitigation planting or anything like that?
No.
Well, other than the amenity planting of trees.
Yes. Yeah. We plant a lot of trees.
There's lots and lots of trees.
And we are conscious of the importance of planting trees.
Mm-hmm.
So we are always planting trees around here, which would certainly assist in reducing carbon emissions.
Are you worried about your climate changing? Obviously, the more plants you have in an area, like Central Otago is pretty dry, and obviously the more trees you have, the higher the humidity in the area. Mm. You know, one of the great things for Pinot growing in Central is the dryness, so you don't get all that disease pressure that you get in a lot of regions. You don't worry about
that? I suppose we should be worried.
I would think it would be a long time before you had the level of transpiration, I think, that you're alluding to that would cause us to be concerned about diseases. But again, I'm not competent to speak on that. I just have my views on that.
You've got the Kawara River running down through the back here. How does that work in terms of frost protection? Is that taking any of the frost protection? Because I notice you've got some pretty great wind turbines in the middle as well.
I think going back a little historically here, when they built the Clyde Dam down at Clyde towards Alexandra there, that I'm told changed the sort of microclimate around this area, particularly at the confluence of the Clutha River, or Lake Dunstan as it now is there, and the Kawara. So you get some significant build-ups of fog and so forth down over Cromwell, which backs up this way to us. But in our experience, of course, that has always been there, and we seem to manage that quite well. The wind machines will keep us out of trouble, except in the case where you've got an air frost, and that in those situations you're really up against it because you haven't got that inversion layer to pull down.
You said that the wind machines, we were talking earlier when we had a look around the vineyard, that they were quite expensive. How much does one of those machines?
Oh, I think the replacement value today would probably be about $55,000.
$55,000.
Yeah, those are automatic and diesel driven.
Are they? Oh, so they just chug away.
They
just
They make a lot of noise. They're like a helicopter.
Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of people in Otago use helicopters.
They do.
In Marlborough, they had all the helicopters from everywhere running a while ago recently.
Yes.
So is that part of the sustainable? You know, did they look at that? Because helicopters are particularly, they're not exactly the most environmentally friendly.
We haven't, obviously, if we've got the wind machines, we're not pulling helicopters in here.
Yep.
But, I guess that gets right back to where we are. We're right on the fringe, aren't we, in terms of where we're producing I guess even if we think of our own winemaker, Grant Taylor, he's just lost some 90% of his 2008 Pinot crop to a frost, a rogue frost on the 28th of November last. So we're always on the edge in looking after that. You've got to find whatever means you can to mitigate the effects.
Okay, then we'll wrap it up there, Blair and Estelle. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chris.